Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Scott Leverance. Scott grew up in the family-owned sheet metal and heating business and in 1989 started his own company from scratch. In less than 3 years, the company grew from 6 employees to 50 with gross sales in excess of $3 million. Scott sold the company in late 1992 and purchased a 30-year-old company in January 1993. Over the past 2 years, he has refocused the company from 100% commercial work to a mix of 50% commercial, 30% residential, and 20% service. Along with running his own business, Scott shares his secrets of success with other contractors, including a presentation at Focus on the Future. Scott is also the co-founder and current president of his local Air Conditioning Contractors Association. Profitable growth in a company is the result of careful planning. And today, Scott will share how the development of a detailed business plan enabled both of his companies to not only grow as planned, but to be profitable along the way.
Do you remember the old Ed Sullivan Show? Do you remember the jugglers and acrobats? And my favorite was the guy that would spin the plates at the end of those long sticks. You remember? He'd throw up one stick and start spinning a plate, and then he'd throw up another stick, and then another plate would go up, and pretty soon he'd have a dozen or so plates spinning all at the same time. The process of business planning is much like the process that guy used to keep those plates spinning. You have to have a method to keep circulating, going around, tapping the various areas of your business just at the right time so it'll stay up, not fall and break. Do you have a business plan? Do you have a written business plan? Very few contractors take the time to sit down and plan their business. We tend to be reactive rather than proactive. For example, before I got involved in the business planning process, the phone would ring and bang, I'm out the door in a flash to be of assistance, to give a bid, to right a wrong. Hey, I'm in the service business. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Well, yes, maybe, but if we react to everything in the same way, how do we control what we are doing? Doesn't that put the control, the planning of our business in someone else's hands? Now, let's say in my business plan, we have certain types of calls for service that don't allow me to fly out the door in a flash. Maybe we've planned through our business planning process that the new construction market, let's say, isn't profitable. We historically haven't brought those projects in on time, and we've determined ahead of time that the new construction is a distraction, not an opportunity. So when the phone rings for an estimate on a new home to be built, we're not so quick to respond. It changes our approach. Do I need an exercise in putting together a bid? Not really. Why is this new construction project going to be different than any other new construction project that we haven't done well on? Opportunity or distraction? What have I planned to do? What percentage of my business is dedicated to new construction? Know the answers to these questions, and I'll know how to react when I get that call. I'm in control because I planned it that way. I've been proactive. This is just one example of what a written business plan did to help my business. Maybe some of the ideas and examples that we'll review on this tape can help you in your contracting business. Hi. I'm Scott Leverance, president and general manager of an HVAC contracting firm in Portland, Oregon. After working at a family-owned business for 12 years, I teamed up with a partner and we started a company that grew in 3 years from 6 to 50 employees. It was during this period that I learned the value of having a written business plan. After 3 years, I left and bought another firm from a competitor that was retiring after 30 years in business. Going solo was a scary jump from the comfort of having a partner. But because I had a strong vision of what I wanted laid out in a written business plan, I was able to make the transition somewhat smoothly and with a solid sense of direction. There are lots of reasons and excuses why contractors don't have written business plans.
Don't have time. Don't need it. Don't know how.
Hey, it all boils down to one real true reason. Fear. Fear of failure. Well, gee, if I put it in writing and I don't achieve it, I'm a failure. Wrong. If we put it in writing and we don't achieve it, we find another way to do it. Up to 30% of contractors go out of business each year. The major cause? No, it's not lack of capital. It's not lack of ambition or lack of knowledge. The Small Business Administration reports the major cause of business failure is lack of planning. Ah, there is credence to the old cliches. Plan your work, then work your plan. And if we fail to plan, we plan to fail. A general contractor we work with once put it to me this way. Well, if I'm going to fail, I may as well have a plan. That way, if I fail without a plan, I won't be kicking myself for not having had a plan. Don't be afraid to take some time to plan your business. Just like a builder needs a set of blueprints to build a house, we need a set of blueprints or a business plan to build our businesses. You may have many plans you are already using in your business. Maybe you have an employee policy manual, or a price book, or a purchase order system. These are components of your master business plan. The key to this business planning process is to take each of the various components you already have in place, and your thoughts, your ideas, and your feelings about your business, then assemble them into one written business plan. Be aware that there are several types of business plans and formats that you can use. It really depends on what you want to use your business plan for. If you need to take a business plan to the bank for a loan, or it might be a business startup, or it may be to maintain and grow a business. My experience has been with the latter, the type of business plan used to maintain and grow a business. It's not fancy, it's not slick. It's practical, and it works by showing that my business has the systems in place to sell our services, our products, and make a profit. What does a business plan include? In general, all plans contain the answers to a lot of questions you will be asking yourself during the planning process. Specifically, for our firm, we use a plan that has 7 major sections, starting with a mission statement, followed by a current summary of the business, which is sometimes called a situational analysis. Then comes our sub-plans, or mini-plans, which is our management plan, marketing plan, financial plan, production plan, and finally, our personnel plan. Each of these 5 mini-plans contains all the details of that particular section's how, what, where, why, and when, followed by a list of goals, priorities, and most important, action steps required for us to carry out each mini-plan. To begin the process, I gathered all the information from our various departments and put the data into a 3-ring binder divided by 7 sections. This allows me to revise and change and grow our business plan as the business changes and grows. Where did we start? Well, with a statement about who we are and what our company is about, often called a mission statement. Now, when I first sat down to write our mission statement, I felt that it was too contrived. Everyone has a mission statement, so let's be different and not have one. I had to ask myself some difficult questions like, why are we here and what are we doing? To help spread the pain, I asked some of our employees what they thought the company was all about. Then I got some input from our vendors and from a few customers too. Each person I spoke with had valuable comments and observations. I got the feeling that they really appreciated being directly involved in our planning process. We discovered the statement doesn't have to be embellished with a lot of flowery prose or to be very wordy. We kept it short, we kept it sweet. We were able to develop a mission statement that tells our customers, our employees, our vendors, who we are and what we stand for. It gives them a theme and promotes a positive attitude among our employees. It gives them focus, direction, and motivation. One side benefit that we didn't count on was that our mission statement allowed our employees some flexibility to adjust their actions based on what the customer's wants and needs were. This moves us into the empowering concept we've read and heard so much about. For our frontline service employees, to be able to make decisions on their own was a real boost to their self-esteem, and it helped keep additional internal work at a minimum. The situational analysis is the next section we needed to assemble. We developed a summary of our current situation. I just sat down with my notebook and started writing. I asked myself questions like, where are we today? And where did we come from? Now, at this point, I wasn't worried too much about structure or format. I just wrote. I asked myself a lot of questions. By doing so, I was able to keep the flow of my text moving. When you start your summary, here's some of the questions I had forced myself to answer. Then I just wrote out the answers and comments in my three-ring binder. About the company as an organization, what date did I start the business? Did the business begin as part-time, or how long ago was that? What's the legal makeup of the company? Is it a sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation? Where's the business been? What type of work do you do now? Is it the same as when you started? Where is your business now? Not just physically in the same location, but what's your sales volume? How many employees do you have? How many services or products do you carry? How did your business develop to this point in time? Do you have a few clients? Many clients? How many clients from the first year in business do you still service? What are the historical trends of your industry and your business? Is it seasonal? Is it recession-proof? What are your market opportunities? What's the view of the current prospects for your business? What's the current and potential market share for the business? Are people moving in or out of your town? Are there new businesses going in? What types of businesses are they? Where do the people that work and trade at those businesses live? What are the long-range forecasts for population growth? How will that affect your business? Will you have to change your way of doing business to accommodate the growth? How will you travel? On the same roads? the same freeways? Is your location okay? On a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being the biggest, where do you fit in your marketplace? How do your competitors see your business? How do your vendors see your business? Do you have a broad company objective? What are your financial requirements, objectives? Do you need a line of credit? Do you need to refinance a loan? Do you need an extension from a vendor? These questions are not an end to themselves. They're designed to trigger more questions you need to ask yourself so you can paint a clear, concise picture of who you are, where you are, and where you want to go. Hey, a plan. Not much. A beginning. The first steps to building your business plan. You've started the process. The 5 mini plans for management, marketing, financial, production, and personnel come next in assembling your written plan or blueprint. The management plan involves planning the how to run your business from day to day. In our plan, we've addressed some what would seem to be obvious management and policy procedure issues, such as what positions do we need to fill in our office? Who's in charge when I'm gone or can't be reached? Who gets the mail? Who makes the bank deposits? It's surprising how sometimes what seems obvious really isn't. For instance, our CPA advised us that the person that makes up the bank deposit should not be the same person making the bank deposit. Well, originally, we overlooked this as a potential problem. In working through the management policy and procedures portion of the plan, we also established employee hiring, discipline, and termination guidelines, an employee training program, salary and wage administration issues, and monthly checklists to ensure we're doing all the reports, all the filings, making payments, and deposits for old Uncle Sam. Our employee hiring, discipline, termination guidelines were turned to a formal process. We learned that if your management team is involved in this area, we needed to be sure they were following procedures that we've all agreed to. Did you know that you can be legally responsible for the actions of your employees? Sometimes the best intentions go haywire when your management team members are not following policies and procedures properly. These guidelines came about because we found ourselves in an uncomfortable position when a competitor called for a reference on a former employee. Now, if your town is like our town, everyone knows everyone else in the trade. Well, a few misquoted statements from our installation manager got back to our former employee, and, well, everyone remained buddies in the end, but it could very easily gotten ugly. Your business management team must keep up with you when it comes to the legal issues, the codes, the regulations facing your industry. Proper education is part of the cost associated with management. Plan for it. Acknowledge it, or it will automatically work against you. Our management plan also includes our organizational chart, job descriptions for each position in our company, computer systems information, who we use for professional services, our CPA, lawyer, and banker. And we also included a succession plan. Who will your business go to? Your children? Your spouse? Let's talk about organizational charts. I like to see things in front of me. If it's staring me in the face, I have to deal with it. So I laid out an organizational chart of how the chain of command flowed. Then I had that chart blown up to poster size and stuck up on my wall. I needed something that showed me who we had in what positions so we could just get our work done. The chart helped me clearly see who was responsible for what. When we did our financial projections for gross sales, we knew we would need X number of people to accomplish X amount of dollars in sales. And with my chart, I had projected what positions we would need to have in place to accomplish that workload. And by the same token, if things had gotten slow, we could see what positions we would cut back on, still making sure the flow of information, the tasks, and the day-to-day business was being accomplished. There are lots of ways to lay out organizational charts. Some are inverted pyramids with the customers on top, or some with the employees on top. My suggestion is to take a 8.5 by 11 piece of typing paper, divide the piece of paper from top to bottom into three sections: the top section, the middle section, the lower section. Now make a box at the top and write in your name or the name of the owner or president. Then in the middle section, make 2 to 3 boxes across, whatever you need to fill in the names of your management team, your office manager, a supervisor, or project manager. And the lower section would be for people on the front lines, the rest of your employees. If you're a small firm, maybe your name will be in several of the boxes. The point is, get it on paper. If you try any one of the suggestions that I make today, create an organizational chart for your business. It's amazing how useful it can be. It can help you remember what employees you have working for you. It can give you a quick head count of how many employees you have when your insurance agent calls. Make a copy and highlight which employees drive company vehicles home. I even spoke with a contractor in Colorado that had taken Polaroid shots of employees and put them on his organizational chart. Some things in this process are evolutionary. Once we had our organizational chart, we discovered we needed to have some job descriptions to verify everything was getting done and then assign various tasks and duties to those positions as we needed. This was tough, especially when it came to our own job descriptions. Have you ever tried listing all the things you do in a day? It took several months to get all the positions in writing. We did ask the employees to write down the different tasks that they did each day, the things they did each week. I found this an interesting experience. Some of my employees didn't want me to know what they were doing, and when I did find out, I was very surprised just who was doing what around the company. I'd suggest letting them know why you're asking them for their input, so they don't get nervous that they're being replaced. If you want to really get your employees looking over their shoulder, ask them to write out their job description and don't tell them why. But I wouldn't recommend doing it that way. In your business plan, a section should be devoted to your key personnel or management team. In our plan, we included 1 to 2 paragraphs on each of the key people in our management team. Not about what they do for the company, that's explained in the job description, but about them personally. Where they went to school, what professional accomplishments they'd achieved, how long they'd been at our firm, how long they'd been in the industry. I've even included them in proposals a few times. I'd like you to consider your employees and how they affect your business for just a moment. One of the things we found out in this planning process is that a business takes on a personality of its own, not just the personality of the owner, but all employees combined create an identity and project a certain personality. As you go through this process, watch for personality traits to develop. Use these traits as positives. Play them up. Develop the culture that's produced. Now, what do I mean by a culture? Let me explain. Personally, I'm not the outdoors type, but most of my employees love to go fishing. So this year, our company started offering quarterly fishing excursions to help achieve one of our goals in developing a better sense of teamwork. The employees usually never catch anything, but they have one great time trying. For us, this builds and develops the team. These events slowly become part of our culture, and it's by design. Now, next year, we're planning a whitewater rafting trip for everyone that wants to go. Since one of our action steps is to develop a closer sense of teamwork among our managers and employees, these types of events help us to establish that goal. Another area we addressed in our management plan was, a crisis plan, for lack of a better term. After the earthquake in Southern California, we started asking ourselves, what if? We posed the question to ourselves, if a disaster happened today, how would we be able to get back into business tomorrow? We discovered there were many things that were out of our control. Water, electricity, phone service, gasoline. But we also discovered that there were more things in our control. Now, we have a schedule for backing up our computer, contacting employees with pagers in an emergency situation, things like this. Out of this process, I also developed a system to quickly contact either my CPA, my attorney, our banker, insurance agent, and computer consultant. Fortunately, I haven't had a crisis to test everything out as yet, but at least I have a plan, and it looks great on paper. So to recap our management plan, we have, among others, our management policy and procedures, our hiring, discipline, and termination guidelines, our organizational chart, job descriptions, key people information, professional service, business advisors, and a crisis plan. The second mini plan we assembled was our marketing plan. Now, I'm not just talking about our Yellow Pages advertising. That's certainly important, but even more important was our entire approach to the marketplace in our community. There are six areas of concern in the marketing plan. These include market research, our pricing strategy, what our service and product mix is, what type of marketing mix we have in place, and how we distribute our service and products. And one of the four most important documents that we use, our annual sales forecast, which is broken down month by month. Now, why do a marketing plan at all? Well, a marketing plan will help you rifle shot your efforts instead of shotgunning your efforts. Help you target the areas where you've been successful, better ensuring your success in the future. The first step in assembling a marketing plan is doing some good old-fashioned market research. What is market research? It's a lot of facts, figures, and assumptions that really don't mean a lot of them by themselves. But when digested and put together, they can take on a whole new meaning. They become a small part of the technique for spinning those plates. Here's an example. When I decided to invest in the company I now own, I started with some research about the area that the business was in. It's located about 20 minutes west of our metro area in what's quickly becoming a center of high-tech industry. I wanted some facts, some numbers, about the people living in the area within a 10 to 15 mile radius. First, I selected the zip codes in the area. Then, I went to the computer and I logged on to an online service, CompuServe. I was able to retrieve all the census information about those zip codes in less than 20 minutes. In a short time, I learned how many people live in my marketplace, how old they are, how many own homes, what their average income is, how old their homes are. With this information, I began to get an overview of my marketplace from an emotionally detached perspective, facts only. Then I got a map of the area, put it up on the wall, and looked geographically at the area for access to and from the freeways, business centers, what the traffic flow was. The location was 5 minutes to the main freeway that leads to the city. With traffic at 55 miles an hour, I figured we could service our city customers within 20 to 30 minutes. So, what information did I have? Well, the marketplace is growing, both business and residential. Income is in the range of our requirements. Most are two-income families. A quarter of the homes in the area are over 20 years old. All opportunities from our product and service mix. Now, I started mixing some emotion and intuition with the facts that I'd gathered. With my market analysis started, I needed to look at my competition in the marketplace. Well, I found out that 80% are smaller than us, 1 to 2 man shops. I found the largest competitor does 90% residential new construction work. That's not in my service and product mix. And I found no one company has concentrated on residential replacement or demand service. The situation presented the opportunity that I was looking for. The market research I did weighed heavy in my decision to make the investment in my company. Much of that research is the basis for our current marketing plan and action steps that we're now implementing. We reviewed and analyzed our two major competitors. We've also compared our service and product mix based on equipment lines, price, ease of doing business, service, and their physical plant. We know why a customer will call our firm rather than the competition without making him look bad. What about our market potential? We described the market growth potentially realistic, and much of the share in the marketplace we can expect to get based on our track record. Sometimes business plans need to be changed, need to be massaged. Recently, we went through a product mix revision in our business plan. For years, we carried one main line of equipment, a line that's considered a little more expensive. After seeing our salespeople miss some opportunities, I felt we needed to offer a second line of budget equipment for several reasons, including the fact that we could bid against ourselves by offering a budget product, taking away the prospect's reason of our bids being too high. The result was we gained sales we previously missed. The second thing it did was it offered the salespeople a higher commission as an incentive on the more expensive equipment, and a penalty on the budget line. The result? They were less likely to sell on price. The third thing is it increased our profit margin, since the budget brand actually had a higher margin than our main brand. The result was that the supplier was more willing to work with us with breaks and with co-op dollars, since they wanted to earn our business. What's your pricing strategy? How does your pricing compare with the competition? Will your pricing policy maintain and increase your market share? Every industry has traditional ways or rules of thumb on how salespeople are compensated. A marketing plan needs to address these options and lay out a system that works in your respective marketplace. What will work in one part of the country may not necessarily work in another. We have at our company several layers of compensation for our salespeople, laid out in their job descriptions. The salespeople can choose which compensation package works best for them. We offer some training, but currently have no recruiting methods laid out in our business plan. A business plan should address how your sales force is motivated, organized, and evaluated. Another part of the marketing plan is our advertising. In our advertising goals, our priorities, and our action steps, we have developed a monthly advertising planner. We call it simply the ad book. Each month is tabbed, and there's a checklist of action steps for each month. These address changes in our newspaper ads. They address changes in our local radio ads. Does an equipment manufacturer have a national promotion we need to tie into this month? The answers are in there. Do we need new refrigerator magnets, which we send out with all of our invoices? Do we need new equipment stickers? What co-op forms need to be sent in? Do we have the tear sheets we need to go with them? When is a home or trade show scheduled? What literature needs to be ordered? Are our trucks being cleaned? Hey, they're moving billboards, aren't they? We can also check our advertising budget each month and compare against actuals in our ad book, too. This also helps with the budgeting process for the next year, since everything is in one spot for quick reference. Keeping our customers is important to us. We spend a lot of time, effort, and money to get them. So we have addressed in our business planning process a method to retain as many customers as possible through customer satisfaction surveys. After each customer contact, we send a "How well did we do?" postage paid card. We get about 50% of them back, which is a pretty good return. Our long-range goal is to have a full-time customer service representative that can personally contact each customer with a follow-up call. We have established in our business plan when we can financially be able to bring on that additional overhead. We realize even the best businesses lose some of their customers each year. We try to analyze how many we realistically think we may lose. The customer follow-up helps us minimize these losses. Then, we also try to forecast how many we think we're going to gain. This brings us to the last part of the marketing plan, which is our sales forecast. The art of sales forecasting is a learned art. We begin with completing all the information we just covered. Then, we continue by taking recent historical data from our last 3 to 5 years. Then, we break down each year's sales month by month. When we're looking at 3 to 5 years worth of sales and comparing each month from year to year, we look for trends, for patterns. How about your business? Is it seasonal? Could you graph the highs and lows through the year? Is it the same from year to year? We break our sales into different departments and then into different units of our business. We look at our historical data, and then we make some assumptions. Based on the first part of our marketing plan, is our business going to increase this next year? Decrease? Our sales forecast will be based on what's been occurring in our marketplace and what we think will happen based on our market analysis, our competition review, our pricing strategies. Do your homework and do your research. A sales forecast is one of the 4 important financial documents that you will use. As the years go by, you'll be able to build on it and use more statistical information and sophisticated methods to prepare your forecast. It's an excellent management tool. The marketing plan. We include our market research, service product mix, our pricing strategy, our marketing mix, and our sales forecast. All these various components help us to establish our goals, prioritize, and make our action steps. Financial plan is next in the plan of the business. Our financial plan is very revealing. All of the information we assemble in our business plan, this area is about 80% historical. In other words, it's a financial recap of where we've been so we can ascertain where we are at a given point in time. Then we can see where we're going to be or where we want to be. The other three important documents mentioned earlier come from the financial information. These are the balance sheet, the profit and loss or income statement, and your cash flow analysis. Say what? This section of the business plan is the most intimidating of all. Many contractors consider a financial statement the amount of cash they have in their checking account. If there's some money in there, great. If not, they better start making some phone calls. These documents are critical to our survival. They can tell us about problems occurring we may not otherwise know about. A balance sheet, which lists assets, liabilities, and equity, can reveal overbillings in accounts receivable and rising inventory levels. The monthly income statement, your profit and loss, may reveal an unexpected drop in sales or a surprise increase in overhead expenses. The cash flow statement may show someone is mismanaging the cash. The financial plan usually consists of the last 2 years of financial statements and other significant historical information like your accounts payable history, vendor relationships, and accounts receivable history, loans, leases, investments that the company has made. We include in our plan our monthly income statement with a year-to-date comparison. It keeps things in perspective when work is seasonal. We also track our overhead expenses and the percentages. Maybe each quarter we explain any of the fluctuations. We also have an income budget. It gives us our projected sales from our sales forecast sheet. Then we show what our expected gross margin is, what's left after our direct job costs, by subtracting our overhead expenses. Can we project any profit or losses? Project losses? That's right. During certain times of the year, our cash business drops off. This allows us to plan when we need to dip into our line of credit. Example, last year our training costs went up. In order to get the increased business accomplished that we had in the summer, we had to invest in some training for our technicians. It made them more productive. They were able to get more work done in a given amount of time. This scenario ties into our sales forecast and our production plan. The actuals, if they seem to be going astray, this gives us an early signal to go back, analyze, and see where we may have gotten off course. It may be bad, it may be good. It's important to find out why so we can stop and make the corrections. As we've discussed this business planning process, keep in mind there is no right way or wrong way to put your plan together. If you cover the 7 major areas that we've touched on today, put all the information in your 3-ring binder, you will begin to see the dynamics of having a focused plan, setting goals, priorities, and taking the action steps. When you have committed a plan to writing, the concept takes on a whole new feeling. I challenge you to get started by committing to just 5 minutes today or tomorrow. Close your office door, hold your phone calls, your faxes, and start by writing down the answers to this one question. What do I personally want from my business? Be honest with yourself. Start the process. Start scribbling notes. Rearrange them add to them, rewrite them. Put these items in your three-ring binder. Set your goals. List your priorities and take your action steps. I'd like to share with you some ideas and tips that helped us through this planning process. Once we made the commitment to the process, we found that we had to get started within 48 hours. If we didn't, we kept putting it off. Our daily routine would get in the way. In analyzing some of the components that we had in place, like our job descriptions, our safety rules, regulations, we asked ourselves a series of questions. What do we have now? What do you like about it? What would we change? What would we alter or improve? And who was involved in the decision, the implementation in our business? We got our key people involved in the planning process. Use whatever tools you have available to you to make it easier. Don't reinvent the wheel. And don't get caught up in the planning process for the sake of planning. Take action. Even if it's on just one good idea, implementing just one good idea is worth 1,000 that you haven't taken action on. Remember, you can't wait for things to happen. You have to make things happen. I learned that my company is more important to me than anybody else. If I wait for other people to take action steps to move my goals forward, I'm going to be disappointed. Even if someone is supposed to get back to me, or if I'm waiting for someone to get something done, there are still plenty of things that I can do to move my goals to reality. It's up to me, and it's up to you, to keep our own plates spinning so they don't come crashing down around us. Thank you.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also receive several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.